Speaking on this program is Brother Winford Claiborne.
Thank you and good morning. Most of you, or at least many of you, are accustomed to hearing preachers read what the Bible says about beverage alcohol. If you have not heard these passages lately, let me refresh your memories concerning the Bible's message on strong drink. Wine is a mocker. Strong drink is a brawler. And whoever is led astray by it is not wise. Proverbs 20, 1. Hear, my son, and be wise, and direct your mind in the way. Be not among winebibbers, and among gluttonous eaters of meat. For the drunkard and the glutton will come to poverty, and drowsiness will clothe a man with rags. Proverbs 23:19-21. Who has woe? Who has sorrow? Who has strife? Who has complaining? Who has wounds without cause? Who has redness of eyes? Those who tarry long over wine. Those who go to try mixed wine. Do not look at the wine when it is red, when it sparkles in the cup and goes down smoothly. At the last it bites like a serpent and stings like an adder. Your eyes will see strange things and your mind utter perverse things. You will be like one who lies down in the midst of the sea, like one who lies on the top of the mast. They struck me, you will say, but I was not hurt. They beat me, but I did not feel it. When shall I awake? I will seek it yet again. Proverbs 23:29-35. There are dozens of comments and observations which could be made and perhaps should be made on these verses from the great book of Proverbs. These statements are God's evaluation about the evils of strong drink. Although such sentiments are not very popular today, not even among church members, they express what God Himself thinks about the destructiveness of beverage alcohol. Can any person do better than to listen to the wisdom of God's holy book? How much grief could the human race have avoided if all human beings had simply listened to the Word of God? I do not, for one moment, want to minimize the teaching of the Bible because it is man's final judge of behavior. But I want to use a little different approach to strong drink today. In case you're tempted to think that only narrow-minded preachers of the gospel condemn strong drink, I want to read to you today a number of statements from political leaders, scientific authorities, prominent literary figures, and others. When I read to you the views of a man like Benjamin Franklin, I am not endorsing all that Franklin did or all he said. Benjamin Franklin did not believe the Bible's teaching about the deity of Christ and about other essential elements of New Testament Christianity. But Benjamin Franklin was a very wise man in many respects. He had seen men destroy themselves and deprive their families because of those men's devotion to drinking. Please listen carefully to Benjamin Franklin, one of the authors of our American Constitution. No man can drink lard into his tub, or flour into his sack, or meal into his barrel, nor happiness into his home, nor God into his heart. My friends, the only people who ever get rich through alcoholic beverages are the manufacturers, the distributors, and the retailers. Those who do get rich from strong drink are trading and trafficking with the bodies and minds and souls of their constituents. Incidentally, if alcoholic beverages are so great for people and so desirable as social lubricants, why do distillers like Jack Daniel of Lynchburg, Tennessee, discourage their employees from drinking alcohol? What would you think of an automobile manufacturer who tried to keep his employees from using their own products? Do you know why Jack Daniel does not want its workers using alcoholic beverages? They know that drinkers do not make the best employees. How tragic that a man would use the family's resources for purchasing whiskey or beer when his children are inadequately clothed and fed. But sane men would not do that, or would they? Do you remember the words of Solomon? For the drunkard and the glutton will come to poverty, and drowsiness will clothe a man with rags. Proverbs 23:21. There are millions of hungry and homeless children whose parents have squandered their money and energy on strong drink. Ask any social worker if you think I have exaggerated this matter. The next three quotations are from men whose names I know, but who otherwise are unknown to me. The first statement is from Reginald Smith. There's nothing like a hangover to occupy a head that wasn't used the night before. The second observation is from John B. Goff. Every moderate drinker could abandon the intoxicating cup if he would. Every inebriate would if he could. John Neal has said, drinking water neither makes a man sick, nor in debt, nor his wife a widow. I do not need to tell you how true these sentiments are. You know drinking gives many people excruciating headaches. You also know that alcoholic beverages are addictive. Solomon asked, when shall I awake? I will seek it yet again. Proverbs 23:35. Alcohol does make a man sick. It does lead to foolish financial practices, and it does leave many widows in its wake. William Penn, an influential American patriot, said, the smaller the drink, the clearer the head, and the cooler the blood. Sir Francis Bacon, a prominent scientist and philosopher, was an astute observer of human behavior. His judgment should carry great weight with thinking people. All the crimes on earth do not destroy so many of the human race, nor alienate so much property as drunkenness. If you will simply remember that 200,000 Americans die every year because of strong drink, and that millions and millions of dollars worth of property is destroyed every year because of drinking, you will not be tempted to argue with Sir Francis Bacon. Giuseppe Garibaldi, an Italian hero, stated very succinctly, Bacchus has drowned more men than Neptune. Just in case you have forgotten your mythology, Bacchus was the god of wine in Greek and in Roman religion, and Neptune was the god of the sea in Roman mythology. Garibaldi was simply saying that more men had been lost to strong drink than have drowned at sea. Incidentally, most boating accidents in American waters are attributable to drunkenness. I remember one particularly tragic accident. 5 men and a teenage boy were fishing just below the dam at Gilbertsville, Kentucky. All 5 of the men were drunk, and they allowed the boat to get too close to the dam. The water from the dam ripped that boat apart. All the men and the boy were drowned. Those who witnessed the accident said the cries of the boy could be heard for great distances. He tried to climb up the dam, but the water washed him back to his death. Boating and drinking, like driving or flying and drinking, do not mix. They are a deadly combination. Thomas Jefferson was certainly one of the most intelligent men ever to serve as President of the United States. Even though he was not present when the American Constitution was adopted, he was almost certainly one of the most influential factors in the adoption of our Constitution. Jefferson could express himself beautifully and simply. His words regarding strong drink should be challenging. of all calamities, intemperance is the greatest. When Jefferson used the word intemperance, he probably had in mind more than the use of strong drink. But there can be no question he was talking about the misuse of beverage alcohol. You may not be a fan of William Shakespeare's writings, but you surely know the beauty and the power of his plays and other writings. He was one of the greatest students of human behavior who ever lived. His observations about strong drink should be heard by everyone in modern times. O God, that men should put an enemy into their mouths to steal away their brains, that we should with joy, pleasance, revel, and applause transform ourselves into beasts. Was Shakespeare correct about alcohol stealing away our brains? History is strewn with alcohol's broken victims. Hundreds of thousands of men, women, and children have lost their lives because of someone's drinking. Homes have been broken from time immemorial because of someone's drinking. Unquestionably, alcohol steals away men's and women's brains. Dr. L.C. Goffin, a physician who has served for many years on the Board of Education in Los Angeles, made these comments on drinking. Since alcohol is a narcotic drug, psychologically habit-forming, and resulting in addiction in at least 10% of the moderate drinkers, it is incumbent on the public schools to teach abstinence rather than moderation. When dealing with narcotics, moderation is dangerous doctrine. Speaking of the addictiveness of beverage alcohol, think for a moment of this little poem. Men make strong chains of toughest steel by forging link to link. So too does liquor addiction grow, drink by drink by drink. A few years ago, Preferred Risk Mutual Insurance Company of Des Moines, Iowa, published a little booklet entitled Success If You Don't Drink. Included in the booklet are testimonials from a number of successful Americans who do not drink and who oppose its consumption. Marilyn Vandiver, Miss America of 1958, says, "I do not drink. All my life I have been interested in sports and clean, healthy living, and consequently, liquor never interested me. When I entered college, I felt that it was not necessary to drink in order to be accepted." Page 1. Roy Rogers, who needs no introduction to most Americans, has sought to live a clean moral life. His words about drinking are of considerable importance. If I were asked the question, "Roy, why don't you drink?" I think the most honest answer I could give would be, "I don't think it is necessary, and I don't." My wife, Dale Evans, and I feel we have found about as happy a life as we can hope for, and we have not found that happiness in cocktail parlors, but rather in our everyday activities. Page 3. For a number of years, Elizabeth Key served as a member of the U.S. House of Representatives from the state of West Virginia. Congresswoman Key offers these ideas about drinking. "One of the great tragedies of our time is that all too many young men and women think they must drink to be accepted socially. An invitation or polite urging is often misinterpreted as acceptance or else. A realistic appraisal of the non-drinkers in any young group will often lead to the realization that they are respected and admired for their strength of character, their firmness of belief. The boy or girl who is different in these respects possesses cleanness and purpose that will be an invaluable assistance later in life. The road to success is paved with self-denials of those things which are harmful and unnecessary." Dick Button, world champion figure skater, insists that alcohol and tobacco are not compatible to anyone attempting perfection in sports. That is the reason no athlete striving to reach the top should indulge in either of these habits, which are harmful to health and success in athletic competition. Page 5. Along the same line, Bob Richards, Olympic pole vault champion, says, "From any point of view, religiously, athletically, scientifically, and socially, drinking is utter nonsense. I strongly advise any young person who desires to excel in any realm of life to abstain completely from the use of a substance that mars and ruins human life." Page 7. Finally, please listen carefully to this view from former U.S. Senator Richard Neuberger from Oregon. "I make no bones about my dislike of intoxicating beverages. I don't like the taste of liquor. I don't like the effects of liquor. And I certainly don't like the results of drinking liquor. I have never understood how a brain befogged by alcohol could endure the tensions and the strains of government decisions." Page 9. On Thursday, November 23, 1961, the Atlanta Journal and Constitution published an article with the title, "Alcohol to Blame in Half of the Cases at San Quentin," says prison psychiatrist. Dr. David Schmidt, San Quentin psychiatrist, says alcohol is a factor in approximately half of the arrivals at the big state prison on the shore of San Francisco Bay. He insists that alcohol is not only a national problem, but an international problem as well. Dr. Schmidt gives these facts about alcohol which Americans need to consider. From 10 to 20% of the patients in state hospitals suffer from alcoholic conditions. 5 to 50% of the traffic accidents are caused by alcoholism in some degree. There are thousands of admissions to Bellevue and thousands of arrests here in San Francisco each year from alcoholism. And 50% of the poisoning deaths are due to alcohol. There are other facts in Dr. Schmidt's article, but these should suffice to warn us of the dangers of drinking. The 20th Century Christian, a journal published in Nashville, Tennessee, had a little article several years ago entitled "My Account with Alcohol." It is worth reading to you. A thick-set, ugly-looking fellow was seated on the bench in a public park and seemed to be reading some writing on a sheet of paper which he held in his hand. "You seem to be writing something," I said. "Yes, I've been figuring my account with old alcohol, just to see how we stand. And he comes out ahead, I suppose, every time. And he has lied like 60. How did you come to have dealings with him in the first place?" "That's what I've been writing about. You see, he promised to make a man of me, but he has made me a beast. Then he said he would brace me up, but he made me go staggering around and then threw me into the ditch. He said he would warm me up, and I was nearly frozen to death. He said he would steady my nerves, but instead he gave me delirium tremens. He said he would give me strength, but he has made me helpless. To be sure," I said, "he promised me courage. Then what followed? Then he made me a coward, for I beat my sick wife and kicked my little child. He said he would brighten my wits, but instead, he made me act like a fool. He promised to make a gentleman of me, but he has made me a tramp." One young woman was accused of being radical on the subject of strong drink. She was motivated to write the following poem. "Go, feel what I have felt. Go, bear what I have borne. Sink neath a blow a father dealt, and a cold, proud world scorn. Thus struggle on from year to year, thy sole relief, the scalding tear. Go weep as I have wept, or a loved father's fall. see every cherished promise swept, youth's sweetness turned to gall. Hope's faded flower strewed all the way that led me up to women's day. Go, kneel as I have knelt, implore, beseech, and pray. Strive the besotted heart to melt, the downward course to stay. Be cast with bitter curses aside, thy prayers burlesque, thy tears defied. Go, stand where I have stood, and see the strong man bow, with gnashing teeth, lips bathed in blood, and cold and livid brow. Go, catch his wandering glance, and see there mirrored his soul misery. Go, hear what I have heard, the sobs of sad despair, as memory's feeling font hath stirred, and its revealings there, have told me what he might have been, had he the drunkard's fate foreseen. Go to thy mother's side, and her crushed spirit cheer, thine own deep anguish hide, wipe from her cheek the tear. Mark her dimmed eye, her furrowed brow, the gray that streaks her dark hair now. The tall worn frame, the trembling limb, and trace the ruin back to him, whose plighted faith in early youth promised eternal love and truth, but who, forsworn, has yielded up this promise to the deadly cup. And led her down from love and light, from all that made her pathway bright, and chained her there mid want and strife, that lowly thing, a drunkard's wife, and stamped on childhood's brow so mild, that withering blight, a drunkard's child. Go, hear and feel and know all that my soul has felt and known. Then look within the wine cup's glow, see if the brightness can atone. Think if its flavor you would try, if all proclaimed, 'tis drink or die. Tell me I hate the bowl. Hate is a feeble word. I loathe, I abhor, my very soul by strong disgust is stirred. Whene'er I see or hear or tell of the dark beverage of hell. Through the years, I have collected a great amount of information about beverage alcohol. I have no idea concerning the sources of some of this material. The excerpt I am about to read to you is a case in point. The brief article has the title, Alcohol's False Claims, and was printed by Christian Publishing Society. I have no idea about that organization and do not know the author, but the ideas are valid, whatever the source. Please think seriously about alcohol's false claims. Alcohol gives strength. If so, why do athletes abstain from training for a contest which requires all their strength to win? Alcohol gives endurance. If so, why do employers always require absolute abstinence from those who are engaged in long and difficult work? Alcohol steadies the nerves. If so, why do marksmen, surgeons, and men whose living depend upon a keen eye and a steady hand let alcohol severely alone? Alcohol lengthens life. If so, why do so many insurance companies charge a lower premium to abstainers? Alcohol sustains health. If so, why do abstainers have less sickness than drinkers? Alcohol brightens life. If so, why are the darkest and dirtiest places always those in which drink shops are the most numerous? And why are the worst crimes, the most brutal assaults, and the most terrible murders always mixed with drinking? The fact is, alcohol is a mocker, promising one thing and giving another, and whosoever is deceived by it is not wise. There are a few more brief quotations I would like to use before our time expires. Judge Stanley N. Barnes of the Criminal Court of Los Angeles County affirms that in 80% of the cases coming before my court, liquor is involved in the crime. in 9 times out of 10, alcohol is involved in a person's getting into trouble the second time. Nobody who knows him would accuse George Bernard Shaw of being a champion of conventional morality. But Shaw knew the damage drinking beverage alcohol could do to human beings. So he wrote, "Alcohol knocks off the last inch of efficiency, which in all really fine works makes the difference between first-rate and second-rate work." President John F. Kennedy called Thomas Jefferson the greatest mind ever to occupy the White House, and that may be a legitimate assessment of Jefferson's mind. President Jefferson wrote, "The habit of using ardent spirits by men in office has occasioned more injury to the public and more trouble to me than all other causes. Were I to commence my administration again, the first question I would ask respecting a candidate for office would be, does he use ardent spirits?" Thomas Alva Edison was America's greatest inventor. Edison explained his reason for not using strong drink. "I have better use for my brain than to poison it with alcohol. To put alcohol in the human brain is like putting sand in the bearing of an engine." It is in order to close our study with a repeat of one verse from Proverbs. "Wine is a mocker, strong drink is a brawler, and whosoever is led astray by it is not wise." Proverbs 20:1. My friends, we thank you for listening today. May God bless you.